Welcome into another edition of the Basketball Show podcast. My name's Andy Bunker.
And I'm Arthur Trish.
Thanks for being with us here as we wind down the end of the NBA season. Certainly a lot to talk about. We've got four quarters of action for you, as always. Second quarter, we'll get into the Hawks. Third quarter, we'll get into some of the NBA draft, which obviously has some to do with the Hawks. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth quarter, we got a couple different conversations. I heard you guys talking about Steve Kerr on the Dukes and Bell program earlier today. A really interesting conversation. We'll get to that in the fourth quarter and some other stuff. We'll start here. The Cleveland Cavaliers are about as unpredictable and almost untrustworthy as any Cavs team or any LeBron team that we've seen over the last decade, I would say.
No doubt. I mean, they started off like gangbusters once they made the trade. Everybody was, and so were we. We were gung-ho on their 4-0. I think it was they started off 4-0 and came back out of the break and appeared to be ready to tackle the top spot in the East. Since then, they've lost four of their last six games, and they're struggling big time. It's like those guys who they obtained from the Lakers have awakened, and they're not playing the way everyone expected that they would. Now, granted, they're not all stars. They're still young. Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. and then Rodney Hood coming over from Utah. He's now hurt, if I'm not mistaken. Those guys haven't really added much in the past week, and so LeBron's playing out there on the court with a lot of young guys and a lot of veterans who have really underachieved this year, like Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, and cats like that. And outside of our main man who formerly was with the Hawks, Kyle Korver, he's about the only consistent threat they've had to go along with LeBron, and they need a whole lot more, and it's showing that they're really missing Kevin Love at this point.
Yeah, no doubt. And I do think that getting Kevin Love back eventually in the next couple weeks before the playoffs come around is going to be helpful for them, but it's just clear that LeBron can't go out there every single night, play 43 minutes, and be dominant on both ends of the court and do that consistently without getting tired, and he shouldn't.
Right.
They're going to make the playoffs one way or the other. That was the quote that he had the other day. I don't care what seed we get.
Right.
You have us in the first round.
Well,
I'm dangerous.
He better, because what you don't want to do is fall out of the top four spots.
True.
Even if you're Cleveland and even if you have LeBron James. Because he feels like if we go in and steal game one, which they did a few years ago when they played the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Final, that they will win the series. Well, I'm not necessarily believing that that could happen with this team, because that's not the same team he had when they played the Hawks. Now, granted, he may feel that he can come out and score 45 points and elevate his game even more in a series like that. But right now, the way things are looking for them, I really have no belief that they can get beyond the second round.
Right. And again, that's going to be the question is, can LeBron do what he has done a couple times in his career before, earlier in his career, where he's surrounded by guys that aren't of equal talent to him or what they've had the last couple seasons, and just put the team on his back and carry him? And I just think it's going to be – it's his 15th season.
Right.
I know he still appears to be the same for the most part, but that's a lot to ask a guy who's got that many miles on his legs to be able to do that with the talent that's in the Eastern Conference at the top.
And a potential extra season added because of all of those playoff
games.
Right,
no doubt.
And let's take a look at how they started the season. They were missing Kyrie Irving, who had been traded to Boston. They had picked up Dwayne Wade. You thought that some of the influx of talent, and they had Isaiah Thomas coming over from Boston. You thought that with
Derrick Rose.
You thought with some of the pieces that they gained, that that would only help them. All of those pieces are gone. And so now it's the only thing that's left is him and the rest of them. And the rest of them aren't really doing their share right now. And so Kevin Love is going to be looked at as a savior if he's able to come in and elevate his game to the level it was when he left. But let's face it, Kevin Love plays a different type of game that LeBron plays. And so he's not in that freewheeling, running-gun affair that LeBron may be putting forth on a nightly basis right now. K-Love is basically going running to a spot and waiting for a shot to go up by himself, or he's getting positioned to get an offensive rebound and getting a putback. That's his game.
Yeah. Again, I mean, it's just going to be basically come down to how much do you believe that LeBron can do what LeBron has done in the past? Can he do it still?
Well, no doubt.
I don't know. I think he can in the early rounds.
He can
rounds.
Do it individually.
Yeah.
But can they do it collectively?
Right. Can he carry them the way that he's done in the past? And Kyrie Irving being gone is certainly a big part of that team not being what they were last season and in the seasons past. The Celtics look pretty good at this point. Certainly the Raptors are doing incredibly well in the East.
The Raptors are playing very well right now, and we've said this many times over the course of our podcast this year. I don't know if I can trust them when the playoffs start. And it's because we've seen too many inconsistent performances from one guy in particular, Kyle Lowry.
In the playoffs.
DeMar DeRozan has had his moments in the playoffs, but over this entire season, he's been their most consistent player. They played the Hawks a couple of weeks ago, and Kyle Lowry had 4 points. And I was like, really? This is a team, and they ended up winning the game. It was the game was too close for comfort. It was in Toronto. But you were like, this is a team you should have put away well before the fourth quarter and late in the fourth quarter. And when I looked at the final stats and I saw that he had 4 points, I was like, you can't have Kyle Lowry in the playoffs scoring 4 points, ever. And he's had moments like that in previous playoff series, and it's cost the Raptors big time. He can't disappear like that on them this year. The pressure's on them to get beyond a certain level in this playoff series, and that's not going to put Dwayne Casey's job on the line.
No.
He was the Eastern Conference All-Star coach. They're in the number one seed right now. They're playing very well. But I'm sure fans in Canada and that organization wants to get beyond a certain level this particular season, and I don't think you can put that all on the coach.
Right. It's just interesting because where we sort of are with the Raptors, and we talked about this throughout the season and even before the season, is they've been in really good position a few times now, and they don't do it. So what they're doing in this regular season is great, no doubt. And if you're a Raptors fan, night in, night out, being able to tune in and see your team win all these games is fantastic. We don't actually learn anything about them, though, until the playoffs get back here. And if they can make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe progress further than that for once. Like, it's hard to say that because, of course, it matters. Mm-hmm. All of the individual games in the season matter, and winning a couple playoff series matter. But we don't really learn who these Raptors are, and Kyle Lowry specifically, until he proves that he isn't going to be that guy again, because we're going into these playoffs thinking to ourselves, just sort of waiting for Kyle Lowry to collapse. And I hate to say that, but he's done that to himself.
Well, and they're a franchise who, even if they have home court advantage, they've proven they can blow it.
Totally.
And so I may have more confidence in Boston in having a home court series. I may have more confidence in Cleveland in having a home court series. But Toronto, no, I'm not thoroughly confident in them. And so they need to do all they can to ensure and play to the best of their capabilities when these playoffs start, to prove to people like us doubters. I know they go by the moniker We the North. Well, they need to prove to some of us in the States that they that they belong and that they are worthy of getting to the NBA Finals, because I would love to see that. It would be great for the NBA, for a team out of this country to the only, well, they're the only team, obviously, but for a team up north to end up in the NBA championship going against, it would be a nice battle, USA versus Canada. Something we've never seen before. And it would be a nice touch, I feel.
It's a great market.
Yes.
And the fans are,
love the city,
are into it.
Yes,
oh, yeah, it's a very fun city. I think it's sneaky. I know NBA fans probably know this because NBA players talk about it all the time, what a great city it is to visit.
Mm-hmm.
I went up to Canada. I went up to Toronto a couple years back, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I just had no idea. I didn't know it was New York. It's basically New York, but it's in Canada. It's huge. It's fun. It's very diverse.
It was definitely one of my top 5 cities in the NBA when I worked for the Hawks. Too often we were there during the dead of winter. There were a few times when we made it up there in late March or late April, and you saw how nice the weather was at that time of the year for them. But can you only imagine in June what the weather would be like, and the fever that would be going on in Canada for an NBA championship? I don't know if I would miss that. I may have to take a trip.
You should. That would be amazing.
I think my passport's still legal.
And if you do, the Hockey Hall of Fame. I don't know if you've been
there. I've done that before.
Yes, I have. My favorite Hall of Fame I've been to, and I don't even care about hockey.
There was an incident at the Hockey Hall of Fame a couple of weeks ago where someone was trying to steal items from the Hall of Fame.
Really?
Like, who does that?
Come on now.
Really? Why would you try? I don't know if it happened during tour hours or if it was after things were shut down, but I do recall reading something about
it's
that.
A weird thievery.
Behave, Canada.
Yeah, get it together. All right, now that's the East. The West is interesting as well. Certainly two teams running away with things. The Warriors and the Rockets head and shoulders above everybody else. And I think the longer this season goes on, the closer we get to fully believing in the Rockets. Now, I'm still on board with the Warriors, and I still think the Warriors are going to come out of the West. But the Rockets are having a heck of a year, and James Harden, I think, is probably going to be the MVP.
Both teams have supreme confidence. But we know, having watched the Warriors over the last 3 final series, we know where their confidence level is. Houston may be confident right now, and they may be confident running through these regular season games. They still, I believe, have to play the Warriors one more time this season. And the Warriors won the last time the two teams faced rather handily. But the Rockets, they're talking tough. And they really seem to think that they can beat the Warriors in a playoff series. As we've talked before on previous podcasts, those two teams have to avoid playing Oklahoma City or San Antonio as well as having to face each other in the playoffs, in my opinion. But of late, Oklahoma City has kind of thrown a wrench in that because they've tumbled out of the playoff race right now.
Well, yeah,
right
and I was going to say the same thing about San Antonio, too. I mean, it's not
–
not...
As a matter of fact, let me correct myself. You're right. San Antonio has fallen out of the playoff race
right.
as we tape this program. Oklahoma City is in the seventh spot.
It's just we are conditioned to think of San Antonio a certain way mm-hmm. because they've been that for 20 years. And look, I think they're still a tough out just because of the talent that they have and Popovich being a great coach.
And the unknown with Kawhi Leonard.
That's the biggest
yes.
thing. I mean, that is one of the weirdest storylines of the year. He doesn't trust the team's handling of mm-hmm. his injury, and there's some weird communication going on between them. Like, it's just not what you expect from San Antonio, where they've never had drama like that.
It's not healthy because today I think they posted on Twitter that he would not play tonight. And so this is happening each and every game. You would
right.
think they would know earlier in the day or the day before if he's going to be able to play, and it's – I know it's got to be wearing on his teammates, too. They can't publicly say anything, and they're certainly friends with the guy, and they want what's best for him, and they don't want him out on the court if he's not 100% healthy because that's going to hurt them. But I've never seen anything like this from an all-star player in any season, in recent memory at least, unless the guy was legitimately hurt and you knew he was going to be out for half a season or something like that. Given the thoughts that Kawhi was going to be back before now and he's still lingering with this supposed calf injury, it just leaves too much doubt and question in everybody's mind, and that's unfair. It may be unfair for us to be second-guessing somebody who seems to be or says he's hurt.
It's just weird.
Yes.
You don't
really
see
is.
This ever, really, mm-hmm. with stars, but then especially with them. Like that organization has just been so good at keeping their issues in-house if they have any. And not having any.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
they've
David
had
Robinson,
these stars that are so professional, I yeah. suppose, with Robinson and Duncan and even mm-hmm. even Leonard. It's weird for them to be going through this.
It was difficult to watch David Robinson try to handle this question when it was posed to him by ESPN's First Take on yesterday. He was doing a set of series of interviews because he's on the NCAA's committee to try to figure out how to handle the one and done in college athletes and the pros and what have you. And when asked the question about Kawhi's situation, he tap danced around it enough. He was very professional in what he said, and he wasn't trying to cast aspersions towards anyone. But I really didn't learn anything listening from him either. And this is a guy who's at San Antonio games on a regular basis.
Sneaky storyline in the West as well. Not a lot of people talking about this, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But the team currently in the NBA with the longest winning streak. Not the Rockets anymore.
Rip City!
The Portland Trail Blazers.
Yes,
they've
sir.
Won 10 in a row. They're in the third spot in the West.
Are they now?
Which is remarkable.
Wow.
Again, I know. With the Rockets and the Warriors so far ahead of everyone, 3 through 8 are pretty tightly bunched.
Yeah.
But because of the way they've been playing lately, because of the 10 in the row, they're in the third seed right now in the West. Damian Lillard is playing some great basketball. Like I don't think that they have what it takes to get past either the Rockets or the Warriors in a 7-game series mm-hmm. if they make it to that second round.
Mm-hmm.
But very fun to see, certainly having worked in Portland and covered them for the time that I did. And that city, speaking of Toronto being a great market, Portland loves their Trailblazers.
No,
so it's fun for them to be having this going on right now.
The Western Conference playoff series will keep us up a lot of late nights.
Yes.
Because obviously the East... it could be compelling on a given game. I don't know if we'll see very many compelling series, but out West, each and every game is going to mean tip the balance as to who's going to win a series. I mean, we're going to go back and forth with each game, with each play, with each ejection, with each high-scoring affair. You've got New Orleans, the Pelicans, who saw their win streak snap because Anthony Davis missed a game over the weekend. They had run off 10 in a row. I don't know, while they're in the fourth spot right now, I don't know if they're a team that can really go far having lost Boogie Cousins, but they've certainly made things interesting over the second half of the season. And like you said, Portland is now in the third spot. We don't know where OKC's head is from game to game. They came out the other night, and I forget who they were playing, and they blew Who are they on against Sunday night? But they blew out someone on ESPN. But the game before that,
Timberwolves.
It was.
I don't remember. I watched it, but yeah, I guess I wasn't watching it that closely.
The Timberwolves beat the Warriors on Sunday.
And
I forget who OKC was playing, and they certainly put forth. Oh, it was Saturday night. I'm sorry. It was Saturday against. It was a Western Conference opponent. I apologize for not remembering these games. There are way too many right now. And plus, we still have other shows to do that we work on a daily basis. So there are times we'll forget a game or two here.
It'll happen.
But tonight they take on the Hawks. And this should not be a game that they stumble with, because the Hawks roster, as we know, is very light on quality players. And that's putting it
gently. They're light on. Why don't we do this? Why don't we get into the second quarter here?
Okay.
And get into those Atlanta Hawks and just exactly who is on that roster. Because you said light on
players.
Yeah, they're just light on
quality players in general.
Kent Bazemore now out for the rest of the year with a knee bruise.
They've got so many players on that roster that I couldn't tell you one iota about them. And both of us are basketball fans.
And we watch every game of theirs.
Yes. And I'm going down tonight. And I'm solely going down to tonight's game to watch OKC because it's their only appearance in town, and I want to see Russell do his thing and maybe see what kind of wild outfit he may be wearing. But Carmelo and Paul George, it's their only appearance here in Atlanta this year, so obviously I would like to see a little bit of that game. But the most disappointing thing for me involving the Hawks over the past week was the fact that it finally came to fruition that they would be eliminated from the playoffs for the first time in 11 years. And that was a hell of a run for a franchise that really, outside of one season in their existence of getting to the Eastern Conference Final, to not make it to the postseason. And it was obvious from the start of the season that streak would probably end. And it came true this weekend, and they're in a strictly rebuilding phase. We can only hope that does not take as long as it did several years ago when I was still with the team and it took us 9 years to get to the playoffs, because it's painful for anybody to go through. That's where they are right now. And like I said earlier, it takes a lot to watch them, even when you're watching them on TV, because certain games, the effort isn't there. And because of the quality of the opponent, they may be down 20 in the first quarter. They do fight hard when they're playing, but at some point in time in each game, you know, come fourth quarter time, they're going to lose gas.
No doubt. And look, I mean, we knew this was going to be the deal throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. The problem is there's seven other teams that are doing the exact same thing.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's historically bunched up at the bottom of the NBA this year, where the first worst team, that's how we're awarding it now, the team that wins the tankathon, whoever that might be, right now it's the Grizzlies because they lose every night. I think they've lost 16 games in a row.
18.
18 games in a row. My bad. Their record is going to be within four or five games of the seventh or eighth worst team in the NBA. So as frustrating as this is to say, the Hawks can't afford to win at all.
Right.
The Grizzlies, like you said, I mean, they haven't won in 2 months.
Yeah, we had Gary Parrish from Memphis, CBS Sports college basketball analyst, on the Dukes and Bell show today. And they kind of segued into that a little bit. And he was like, man, I'm watching the Hawks every night because I want to see them win a game here and there, because Memphis is determined to get the number one spot. As we said, they've lost 18 in a row.
Right. I mean, it kind of is interesting in like in a weird way, in a backwards way, where the race for the bottom of the NBA is tighter than the race for the top.
Right.
There's only two teams that are competing for the best record in the league. There's eight teams that are competing for the worst record in the league, and they're getting creative with it. And again, like, it's not my job to say whether or not the Hawks are doing this on purpose. Mm-hmm. They are, mm-hmm, obviously. And I don't know if the league is going to step in or not, but the Hawks have like 15% of their roster are guys that are D2 school players who you'd never heard of unless they were trying to do what they're doing this season.
Well, to that point of whether the league is going to say something to them about it, they've already said something to the Bulls.
Right.
Adam Silver spoke to them about one of the rosters they trotted out about a week and a half ago. And the Bulls came back out, and they decided that they got the message.
And they beat the Hawks on Sunday.
Right. And for those of you who really care a whole lot about this, there's a website, believe it or not, that will give you daily updates on the tankathon that's going on in the NBA season. And it's appropriately called tankathon.com.
It's a great one. And they also have a Twitter account.
Yes, they do.
They'll keep you up to date with these teams and what they're doing.
And we will also post the daily race for the lottery balls on our the basketball show 929 Twitter page each and every day. And so it's, like you said, it's funny. Right now, as we tape this program, the Hawks are tied with Orlando at 20-47, but Orlando has the third spot because of either games between opponents or conference or division or conference seeding tiebreakers as well.
Reverse tiebreakers.
Right.
You have to think about it backwards because we're usually looking at winning games as tiebreakers, but you want to have lost those games in order to get these lower tiebreakers against these teams.
And as you mentioned, aside from Memphis and Phoenix being 1-2 with 18 wins and 19 wins respectively, the 20-win club is Orlando and Atlanta as we tape this. Then you have Sacramento, Brooklyn, and Dallas at 21 wins, and Chicago at the eighth spot at 23. So this can change a whole lot over the final, what are we looking at, 15 to 17 games?
Sure.
Left of the season, and so the Hawks need to, in my estimation, be in the top three. They don't need to be fooling around and in a 4-7 because based on some of the draft prognosticators out there, the picks are all over the place as to who might get and who might grab this guy or that guy. But I would feel more comfortable. Well, first of all, we would all feel more comfortable if the Hawks got the number one overall pick.
Sure.
Remove all doubt.
That would be the whole goal.
But
the whole
if they're within the top three, I'm cool with
that. Yeah, that's fine. And again, especially with what everybody is doing. Like you said, the Grizzlies have lost 18 in a row.
Oh.
And they're only two games ahead of the Hawks in terms of losing. Again, it's backwards. The very masochistic way to watch the end of the basketball season.
I feel for the organization and the people who work for them.
Me
because
too.
It has got to, and the fans, because obviously they're paid their hard-earned money to come out and see that. But if you're working for that franchise, it must be absolutely tough to go to a home game. Watching it on TV is easy because you can turn it off at any time you want to. But watching those games at home, oh my God, they're excruciating.
Well, let's get to what the reward might be for all of this excruciating basketball, and that's those draft picks, obviously. I mean, again, that's the goal of this entire thing, the rebuild through the draft and try to figure out who's going to be the next superstar, and having a higher pick makes it easier to do that, and I'm with you. It's going to be very disappointing if at the end of this season the Hawks don't have a top three pick. Every draft, mock draft, has a different group of three guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a different order of three guys. It seems the consensus right now is the top three guys are going to be DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, and Marvin Bagley. It's just a matter of which order they go in. They go to, of course. At this point, as we sit here today, what is it, March 13th? If the Hawks end up with the number one pick, I am on the DeAndre Ayton bandwagon. He's the guy that, after having watched him play, a handful of games over the last couple of weeks and take his team through the Pac-12 tournament, dominate the way that he's been dominating. He's the guy that I believe most in right now, but we got the NCAA tournament ahead of us. Maybe that'll change in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm sort of on that same page. I know we were gung-ho about Trae Young earlier during our podcast history, but Ayton is such a beast inside, and he was described by Jay Billis over the weekend as the Wilt Chamberlain of this NCAA tournament. That's a lofty title to give someone. But I think what he means by that is because the game has become such a perimeter game for a lot of big guys, he's the one true center in the bunch who can dominate a game single-handedly, provided his guys are knocking down those jumpers. Because let's face it, a college team can change from zone to man-to-man and vice versa real quick if those guys on the perimeter aren't knocking down shots, and they can certainly make things difficult for Mr. Ayton. But he is confident in his abilities. He talks a big game, and he can certainly help a team get to that next level. I hate when they start comparing guys, and we all do it, but I hate when you start putting titles of Hall of Famers on certain guys because I watched Wilt Chamberlain play.
Wilt Chamberlain is a pretty...
the man was incredible.
It's pretty tough shoes to fill.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk amongst the centers of all time, leave Chamberlain, Jabbar, Russell and Shaquille O'Neal alone.
I mean, I even think it's so hard because I've heard a lot of people with Ayton comparing him to Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns, just sort of the way that he plays. He's got a little bit of a perimeter game.
Mm.
Well, not a little bit. He can take it out there and shoot. Mm-hmm. And clearly that's what teams want in the NBA right now. You want that versatility. It's not so much a post game, as obviously we know. But even that is tough. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on a kid. Anthony Davis is one of the five best players in the NBA right now. If Ayton comes in and is anything near that, that's a win.
Yeah.
Now, if he comes in and is that, that's a franchise changer. And, of course, that's what teams like the Hawks and the rest of these tankathon tankathon teams are looking for. But I always want to just let kids be who they are. Like, DeAndre Ayton is going to be DeAndre Ayton.
That's right.
Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. Karl Anthony Towns is Karl Anthony Towns. If he can come in and be a franchise changer, that's great, and that's what you're looking for.
Well, ESPN today, as we taped this program, listed their latest mock draft. And their top three picks they have as Ayton, Luka Doncic, and Jaren Jackson Jr., which surprised me at number three. Now, in watching Michigan State, I've watched several of their games, but I didn't necessarily pay a whole lot of attention to Jaren Jackson. He's the son of the former Georgetown star and NBA player Jaren Jackson, who was a forward out of New Orleans, and he's bigger than his dad, and he has the size of 6'11", 240, and he plays the power forward center position. Now, he will be the youngest player coming into this draft, and so...
Even younger than Bagley?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
When Bagley skipped his senior year in high school. That's amazing.
As a matter of fact, I'll read you ESPN's comments on him.
Perfect.
The youngest prospect in the draft... Jackson may have the highest ceiling in terms of his ability to affect the game on both ends of the floor. He has enviable physical tools, including a 7'4 wingspan and tremendous mobility. His ability to create space on the floor, he shoots 40% from three, 80% from the line, block shots 5.7 per 40 minutes, and his ability to switch on every screen and increasingly put the ball on the floor from the perimeter makes him an ideal fit for the modern NBA. It's easy to see Jackson manning the center position for Atlanta or pairing with John Collins in an athletic front court.
Yeah, no, I've liked what I've seen from him, no doubt about it. He's skyrocketed up the draft boards little bit more over the last month because Miles Bridges was the guy who was getting a little bit more attention at the early part of the season. I like what I see from him. I didn't know he was quite that young, which maybe gives him even more upside to be able to grow into his athleticism and all of that. But it's not an exact science, obviously. Mm-hmm. If it was, GMs wouldn't get fired every single year. And, right. There wouldn't be eight teams tanking.
And the most consistent player over the course of the entire season, from start to finish, has been the guy out of Duke, Marvin Bagley
Jr. No doubt.
He's fourth on this list with Mohamed Bamba of Texas, Wendell Carter, and Michael Porter Jr. Following 6 and 7. Michael Porter Jr. is going to be the most intriguing pick of any of these guys in this draft because we have a very small sample size of him because he went out, I think, after game two with a back injury.
He played 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Had surgery and just recently came back in the SEC tournament when they faced Georgia, ironically enough. And they were eliminated in that game. And did Missouri make it to the NCAAs?
They did.
They did.
Yeah, they'll be in the tournament. So
we'll get a chance to see a little bit more of him. And I'm going to watch their games specifically for the purpose of watching Michael Porter Jr.
Absolutely.
Because he came into this past season. Initially, it was believed a year ago that he would be going to Washington because his dad was an assistant coach on the staff of Lorenzo Romar.
That would have been nice.
Yeah, it would have. That's Andy's old school, by the way. and when Romar lost his gig, his dad partnered up with Quanzo Martin, who left Cal to take the job at Missouri. If you can follow all of those machinations, thank you. But Michael Porter Jr. is a heck of a talent. His brother is an equally very nice player for the Missouri Tigers. But he has looked to be, and he's been rumored to be a top five pick throughout this season, even when he was sitting on the bench. So it'll be interesting to see how a lot of these NBA scouts view him with such limited sample size and gameplay that you've been able to get of him.
Yeah, I'd like to see where his athleticism is at because clearly coming off of a back injury, you just never know. Back surgery, you never know. He was very athletic in high school. Now, he spent his senior year playing in Seattle, so I got a chance to watch him a little more than I otherwise would have probably. And he, you know, I know he gets a lot of credit for his perimeter play. He's a good shooter. He's very big, just a really smart player. But I think he's a lot more athletic than people talk about as well. He threw down some dunks his senior year that, you know, you see NBA players able to accomplish. We'll see that in the NCAA tournament because we haven't seen him play much this season. Hopefully they go on a little run and he reestablishes his draft stock.
Well, and to that point, Porter Jr. is 6'10". He's 214. He's viewed as a small forward, power forward, and as ESPN lists, his stock has dropped this season. Spinal surgery set him back, and teams have also come away from his situation with background checks, questioning his commitment to winning and his ability to fit into team schemes. This was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, that is harsh.
It's a little harsh when the guy hasn't played, so I don't know how you can immediately come to all those conclusions, but that That's what they listed. Here's a guy, we glossed over him just a little bit, but he would be familiar to fans in Atlanta because he went to high school here, and that's Wendell Carter out of Duke. Now, I'm not saying the Hawks should draft him or anything like that, but he's rocketed up the board as well. He's a 6'10", 263-pound center for Duke, whose ESPN list, it's Carter, not Bagley, who has been Duke's best big man in many key ACC games, leaving many scouts to wonder just how good he might look if he were utilized in more modern lineups with better floor spacing. For the Bulls, they envision him going to Chicago. Carter's ability to rebound, block shots, and score from inside out will complement the promising Lauri Markkanen in many ways.
Yeah, that's always the question with Duke guys because they play such a specific style and such a specific system. Like, I didn't know what Jason Tatum could do.
Right.
I didn't know he could do all that stuff because he was used in such a limited way, really,
and
in Coach K's system.
Looking back, he should have been the number one overall pick.
Oh, right. And if they would have let him be that guy at Duke, they might have won a national championship. Because he comes in here with the Celtics and he's been phenomenal because he gets to play the style of game. I mean, the NBA style fits his game better than what they did at Duke. So that could very well be the same thing with Wendell Carter, could very well be the same thing with Marvin Bagley. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'll be all about the workouts and getting together with teams and the combine and stuff like that for those guys. I will say this, though. Speaking of local guys, I love Colin Sexton. I would be... If the Hawks end up winning a couple of these games down the stretch and don't get into the top five and end up picking 6, 7, 8, whatever, I am a staunch advocate for Colin Sexton. I think he has the game, but also the personality to come in and be that guy. And I think we both agree that John Collins has been a really nice player, but also a very solid personality and has the star quality about him to maybe want to be that kind of guy for the Hawks. I like the idea of Colin Sexton and John Collins together because their personalities would mesh very well. And as the Hawks are trying to rejuvenate their franchise, I think those could be two guys to build around.
Yeah, Sexton, I'm with you. His game has certainly impressed me more over time because obviously Trae Young got all the attention early. And that's not to say that I've fallen in with my disappointment with Trae. It's more his team that is disappointing me more than his actual play. And while they got into the NCAA tournament and maybe didn't deserve it, let's face it, he is a star, and that's why that team was probably selected to play in the March Madness 64. But Colin Sexton is certainly worthy of everything that's coming his way, too. He was probably, in all likelihood, the SEC's freshman of the year. He, as you said, he played here locally in the metro Atlanta area. He can certainly do wonders for the Hawks if he were to fall to them, depending on how far they drop in the lottery chase. It would pose some interesting problems for him, the Hawks, that is, because now do you play him? Colin is probably more a point guard in the truest sense than Dennis Schroeder is. Dennis has the ability to play both positions, and so you won't have much of a drop-off there, but it does give you some options.
I would love to see that happen for a number of different reasons. One of them being DeShaun Tate, who covers college basketball and high school basketball closer than anybody, tells us that Colin Sexton's the most competitive guy in college basketball. He just has that fire about him. And so I would like a young guy to come behind Dennis and push him a little bit. Dennis has been sort of the young, you know, whatever, wonderkind since he got here. Uh-huh. Let a little competitive rookie come behind Dennis and try to take his job and see if Dennis is competitive, because you know what? I don't think he is. I'd like to see somebody try to come take his job and see him fight for it.
Well, you know, you talk about that fire, and I found someone posted this video over the weekend during the SEC tournament of Colin Sexton playing AAU basketball, and he was going up against Penny Hardaway and Penny Hardaway's team and his son, and he basically called Penny Hardaway's son trash. I was like, are you serious? Now, I was a little disappointed in Penny, and I know Penny, but I was disappointed in Penny not stepping to the kid, not literally putting his hands on him.
Right.
But he's talking about your son. Are you serious? You're going to let him get away with that? And so Penny has a real low-key demeanor, and he's done wonders in coaching up in the Memphis area. It's rumored that the Memphis Tigers may replace Tubby Smith with Penny manning that job.
Kind of seems like the right call, doesn't it? Penny seem like he'd be the guy?
Yeah, and I know Tubby as well and love him to death.
Sure.
But Memphis Memphis is one of those basketball hotbeds where you can pretty much build a team from the Memphis area.
Right. And again, no offense to Tubby, but right. His best days are behind him.
Yes, it is.
Penny's best days in coaching are in front
of
him.
Yes, it is. And when I saw that video, I just immediately started roaring. I was like, and it went on for a minute. I mean, Colin is looking over at Penny. He's at the free throw line, and you're like, dude, is Penny going to say anything to this cat? And so it just shows how competitive and how fiery he is. And he's not going to back down from
anybody.
Was
he cooking him, though? I mean, what's Penny really going to say if he's out there?
I guess, yeah. I guess Penny realized that there's not much I can say. I can't get back out there anymore. And so he just let him be.
All right, let's get to the fourth quarter here and wrap things up with a couple different off-the-court conversations. I heard you guys talking about this on Dukes and Bell earlier today about Steve Kerr. I think we have a really interesting group of NBA coaches right now with Kerr and Van Gundy, Pop, guys that are very willing to be socially active and socially conscious.
The most progressive coaches in all of sports.
In all of sports, yeah. They maybe it's because of job security. Maybe it's because of the league that they play in and they feel they have an obligation to their players. Whatever it is,
yeah.
I love so much
the NBA,
these guys are willing to do this.
The NBA has always been the most progressive league out there. And don't forget about Doc Rivers and what he did and went through during the Donald Sterling years and how the demise of Sterling and him not owning that team became. But, yeah, you're right. These guys, my hat's off to them because they didn't have to do this. And being an African-American, it pleases me that these guys, we all want to see a better world in which to live in. And I think these guys have taken it upon themselves when a lot of these other coaches on prominent levels of college football, college basketball, the NFL, Major League Baseball, choose not to. And it's disappointing because a lot of these programs have been built on the backs of not only white players, Hispanic players, Asian players, but also African-American players. Some of these coaches have gone on to make boatloads of money off the backs of a lot of these players. And they know what a lot of these players have endured, or a lot of players who came before them endured. And they played with a lot of these players over time and over history. But for them to take a back seat on a lot of these issues and not speak up is very disappointing to me because I love Nick Saban and what he's been able to do at Alabama, but you can't tell me that Nick Saban couldn't change a few minds and opinions if he were to speak out on behalf of some of the issues that went on in his fair state of Alabama during that election I believe it was November.
Yeah.
And everybody said, well, they need to stick to sports. No, it's not about that anymore. When our president decided to get himself involved, and look, every president has been involved in sports.
Right. And it's never been about that. Obviously.
You're bringing champions to the Rose Garden to welcome them for winning championships, and you're making jokes and also talking about the prominent player or coach on that team. And so there's always been that fine line where a lot of these guys have gone to events, thrown out the first pitch at baseball games or sat courtside at basketball games. And while they may not go to Super Bowls as much, if you notice, presidents don't necessarily attend Super Bowl. It's usually the vice president. But we also had the president at this year's college football playoff championship game here in Atlanta. So don't tell me anymore about we should all stick to sports, because that day has come and gone and passed maybe a decade or more ago.
Well, I've got a question for you, because obviously you've been around sports for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never stuck to sports, obviously, or at least some people have not stuck to sports, right. Thank goodness. And some of our greatest heroes in American sports history are people that didn't stick to sports. I mean, you think back through and think of guys that are now thought of as
revered.
Yeah. I mean, Absolutely. Muhammad Ali is a great example. Jesse Owens, all the way back in the 36 Olympics, great example. Jackie Robinson, like all these guys. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, there's Jim Brown. There's a million names of guys that were great athletes, but also great activists and spoke up and had a voice and probably are remembered as much for that as they are for their play on their field or in their given sport. So I wonder, like, as we sit here in 2018 and clearly need to be having these conversations because of everything that's happening right now, and people want to say stick to sports, and it's just infuriating, and clearly we're not going to do that. Do you think 25, 30, 40 years from now, we'll look back at some of these guys who are speaking up now and think of them the same way? Like, I know they're not quite, Colin Kaepernick's not quite the same talent level as a Jim Brown or a Muhammad Ali or something like that, but those guys weren't, their Q rating wasn't super high. Like Muhammad Ali wasn't the most popular guy in the world in 1968.
Not at all.
Now he's a saint in American sports culture, in American culture in general.
Some feel because he's dead and gone that's the case, or because he attracted the illness he did and couldn't talk.
Right.
That was the reason for his popularity growing.
But it's so interesting to me to listen to certain people say things about Muhammad Ali or about Martin Luther King or about any of these guys, and they also don't believe or support in a lot of these guys are saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love so much about Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. The willingness to answer these questions and answer them honestly and not dance around them, because they're asked this stuff every day. Now, Steve Kerr gives an interesting quote about something that's happening in this country every single day.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do that. He probably offends some of the Warriors fans, but he doesn't care about that, and I think it's awesome.
And here's to the stick-to-sports crowd. There hasn't been a game over the course, and it doesn't matter the sport. While we might not have NFL coaches or collegiate coaches, basketball or football, speaking on several events, these athletic programs, these professional leagues are always doing something that's helping out society. So you may have a breast cancer awareness month, colon cancer awareness month, something for the Heart Association. That's not sticking to sports. You may have somebody in your life who has died from one of those illnesses that affects you deeply. You mean to tell me you didn't care that the Orlando Magic didn't reach out and donated funds or a night to the American Heart Association or the Leukemia Society or the Cancer Society or Make-A-Wish Kids? Each and every one of us knows someone who has crossed paths with someone who has been struck with an illness or who has been affected by a family member dying or domestic violence incident or something like that.
Thursday night this week, the Unity game that the Hawks are putting on.
And Hawks and Charlotte.
Proceeds go to the Boys and Girls Club and to an elementary school. That's great.
Yes.
The Boys and Girls. I went to that Boys and Girls Club where the money is going to a couple weeks ago and as a part of an outreach with the Hawks and did some community service and, you know, helped clean it up. They need money.
Yeah.
It's in a neighborhood that's rough. The kids go there that don't have a lot of resources, and the fact that $5 from a ticket of a basketball game that you're going to could help provide some school supplies for a kid. Again, that's not sticking to sports.
No, it
but
is.
Clearly
but.
It's valuable.
Well, very much so, because let's face it, a lot of these inner city programs have been decimated over the last 25 to 30 years. I grew up on a program called NORD in New Orleans. It was the New Orleans Recreation Department. And we had playgrounds in our neighborhoods, and you could find me there to all hours of the night. Now, I knew when the lights came on my front porch, my behind better be in the house or I was going to pay for it. But my mother knew exactly where I was. The playground was right across the street from my house. Not everyone was that fortunate to be able to step right outside their door and go shoot hoops or play baseball, football in the playground next to their home. But a lot of those programs started to dry up. Those city recreation programs started to dry up, not just New Orleans, not just Atlanta, but Seattle, New York, and everywhere else. And now private money is basically funding a lot of those programs, if they even exist at all. And so the efforts of some of these teams, and when I was with the Hawks, we did a lot of these things. The Boys and Girls Club, one in Marietta, I'm not sure if it's still there, but the Anderson Boys and Girls Club, which my son eventually ended up going to. Those programs are comforting because it allows you to be able to send your kid someplace where you know you hope that he or she will be safe for a period of time, whether it's the weekend or when you get off from work, and they can to do their homework and learn about participating with people they don't know, cultures they don't know, and it helps us all in the long run. So it makes us a better society at the end of the day. But to answer your question, yeah, I hope these guys are recognized for their social awareness. LeBron James is probably the most woke player in America. And while I might have issues at times with him with his play on the court and the fact that I will never put him on my Michael Jordan level because of the lack of championships, in terms of his social awareness, he's up there. He surpasses Michael Jordan
as far as that goes. Pretty much anybody.
Yeah. And today, he's assuming that mantle with no hesitation. He doesn't hesitate in talking about issues that some people may feel, no, you don't have any knowledge because you didn't go to college. Well, not every smart person went to college, and not every person who went to college is smart.
In fact, a lot of them are not.
Exactly. So sometimes we need to check ourselves and understand that we will all talk about what's happening in our world within our United States. And if it makes us a better country, then at the end of the day, isn't that the most important thing?
It should be. It should be the most important thing. Unfortunately, it seems like that's gotten lost a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the most important thing a lot of times for a lot of people is to either be the loudest or have their opinion echoed to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a lot of the pushback with these guys.
Well, and some of that's LeBron. Because of social media.
Because you can create a world for yourself that is only reinforcing the views that you have, which is crazy. Like, we have more access to information than ever, more outlets covering news than ever, more social medias, ways to connect with each other than ever. And yet people create these very narrow viewpoints for themselves because you can create it.
Right.
Whereas before, the news was at least attempting to bring you some sort of bias view. And you're right. I mean, that should be the goal. What's best for everyone. But people don't want to hear something that doesn't reinforce what they think. And again, that's why I love Steve Kerr and these guys getting up there and being like, I don't really care if this makes you uncomfortable. You probably should be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If you are uncomfortable, then maybe we can talk about why and something can happen.
Well, I have a T-shirt, and I've been flipping through my pictures to try to find it, but I've got so many pictures on here, I'm not going to be able to find it before we get out of here. And it talks about sports, and it has a global map of the world. And I can't remember the phrase to save my life right now. But when I saw that shirt being advertised, and it was by a guest that we had on our Dukes and Bell show back in the Super Bowl when we were in New Orleans, and it was the 49ers against the Ravens. And she was a sports lawyer, and she was talking about an issue. And so I followed her on Twitter, became friends with her. But the shirt she was selling when she became an instructor at Miami, it just touched me, but because it encompasses a lot of what we're talking about here and how sports – we try to make sure that it is not only a part of our daily lives, but that it also takes us away from the troubles of the world, too. And I wish I could remember that phrase right now, because I think, like I said earlier, I think it's so apropos of what we're talking about here. But sports has given me so much over my years of not only playing it when I was in high school, but working on the college level and the pro level for two different sports leagues and teams, that I don't think I would have ever done anything differently. If I would have done anything differently with my life, I would have either tried to be a referee, NBA referee, or following my initial passion of getting into sports broadcasting and being the next Brian Gumbel or somebody like that. But I don't have any regrets because I had the best of both worlds. I was still working with broadcasters and reporters across the country, locally and nationally. I was still going to games, had the best seat in the house. And I was also influencing those around me. And what I mean by that is helping young men become what I hoped they would become as better citizens, as better representatives of our sports franchises. And if I only contributed a little bit in that grand scheme of things, then I've done the job I was put there to do, because you have to care. And I always went into each and every year with any of the rookies we might have had to try to get them to know them away from the court. Because, yeah, we all know they're talented athletes, but what makes them tick on a daily basis? What is going to be the thing that continues that rapport that you will have when their playing days are over with? And I have a lot of friends who have played for the Hawks, who have played for the Lions, played at LSU, played at Tulane, who I'm still in contact with to this day. That doesn't happen all the time. A lot of people think because they're in sports that sometimes it's all about them, and once those players are come and gone, they're out of a distant memory, and they don't want to take their phone calls because they're alumni now, and that's what they should be, and it's not my problem. But no, they're part of your franchise's history, and you should never whitewash anything that the franchise has developed over its existence, because you'll leave at some point in time and somebody's going to come and surpass you and what you were able to do, whether you're in the front office or you're on the basketball court, football field, or baseball field. And that history needs to be there, and people need to know about it. And I can't put it any simpler
I also don't know that there's ever a collection of people that have a more different and diverse set of backgrounds and set of viewpoints, probably, than you get at a sporting event.
Exactly.
Like a Falcons game is probably the prime example. I mean, especially in Atlanta.
Yeah, especially in Atlanta.
People coming from basically every possible walk mm-hmm. of life. I mean, you've got, we know the diverse spectrum of people that live in this city and in this state. And so you've got all these people coming from all these different places that think all these different things in one place.
Right.
I think that's a really great opportunity to start a conversation.
And we see that now with Atlanta United, the new
right.
soccer team here. They've been able to tap into something that none of these franchises has been able to do. They're getting them young and old. Black, white, Hispanic,
female,
whatever.
Male,
yes.
Everything. You name it.
They're building a franchise for generations to come. They just have to win and win consistently now. That pressure is now on them. They may not get the honeymoon a relative expansion franchise would get in other leagues, but I'm sure they're ready for the challenge and they're willing to do what's necessary to continue to build their brand. But no, you're absolutely right. It's I think in the South, having been able to visit every major league city through my NBA days and some of them through my NFL days, the Southern teams, you find more diverse audiences with the sports teams than anywhere else in this country. And because, A, people love them. People are in tune with what's going on with their teams. And that's not to say other areas aren't. But in terms of the general makeup of this country, you find that more within the South, I think, and their teams than you do anywhere else. And if you're willing to watch guys bust heads or go up for layups or knock home runs each and every day and act like those teams aren't trying to build harmony in those locker rooms, and you walk away from those games having the attitudes and ideals you may have, then you shouldn't go to a sporting event, because it's the biggest, like you said, it's the biggest melting pot there is, and we should learn something from that.
No need to stick to sports.
Not this guy.
All right, we went pretty long there in the fourth quarter, and we also went over 48 minutes.
Yeah,
but
we got
what?
A little deep tonight.
I don't regret
but that's,
it.
But that's fine.
It was the right move.
That's fine.
All right, we'll be back next week with the Basketball Show podcast. Still clearly tons to talk about.
We'll hit our 20th.
That's right. It'll be the 20th episode.
There we go.
We'll see if the Hawks still have 20 wins at that point. I hope they do.
Yeah, I think you're safe on that one.
You can follow me on Twitter at TBM929. You can follow the show on Twitter at the B-Ball Show 929.
And you can follow me at X Hoops PR Guy.
We'll talk to you next week.
From way downtown. Bang!